Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence. Your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning right here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300. Be a part of the show by tweeting Matthew at ML on WLXG. Ask questions or comments on what you'd like Matthew to talk about on the show. Today's show is sponsored by French Lick Resort, Lexington Parks and Recreation, Play Golf Lexington, and by Edwin Watts Golf. Let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Good morning. Happy Sunday of Labor Day weekend morning. How about that Riders Up show? That show is great. Our Frankie Lyons and John Gaver guys. But it is the Sunday of Labor Day weekend. Hopefully, you'll be able to play some today, maybe some tomorrow. But it's good to have an extra day. It's always good to have a three-day weekend, always. This episode of the show is pretty special to me. I love doing them all, but this one in particular, Perry French will join me, as always, and he's always great. Our two other guests. First, my brother Mitch Lawrence, who did something historic for the last 4 days down in Myrtle Beach, and he'll tell us what it was, and it's really, really a cool thing. It has to do with the World Amateur Handicap Championships down in Myrtle Beach and something my brother did while playing in that championship. So we'll talk to him a little later. But Peter Kessler, the voice of golf, will join me for just a great segment. Think about this. Peter Kessler, with the Golf Channel, wrote, hosted, and produced 1,300 live shows. 1,300. And over 1,700 shows on Sirius XM PGA Tour Radio. He was the first voice on both of those platforms of golf. Peter Kessler will join me a little bit later, and it's just going to be a great hour. So stick around. It's Backspin Golf right here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300.
Now, joining Matthew on Backspin Golf is Perry French, PGA professional and territory manager of Srixon Cleveland Golf.
Let's see. Perry French. That's kind of the mood I'm in this morning. It's not the normal up. Perry French. Hey,
you're
Perry
subdued.
French.
It's
not subdued. Well, I know it's the playoffs, but first of all, this week is weird because it's a Friday to Monday tournament.
It is.
It's like yesterday. I mean, on Thursday, I was completely thrown off.
You were stuck with having to watch the web.com.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting, though? I mean, they're great players out there, but it really doesn't have the...
No, the zip of a PGA tournament. Hi, Perry French.
Good morning.
Yeah, okay. Let's just get that out of
the way.
That's right. Mr. Srixon Cleveland guy. Web.com, so Thursday...
Start for them.
This is the big deal for them. Thursday, I go home at night, and they're replaying the web.com from earlier in the day.
Right.
And just as I turn it on, Hunter Mahan.
Yes.
Remember Hunter Mahan, how good he was and how... Okay, so he's playing in this event.
Yeah,
he's playing in this event. He's just off the green. He's got a bunker in between to an elevated green, kind of, and he's got a bunker in between he and the green. And hit a shot like I do. Like dead shanked a chip that he was trying to chip over this bunker. And then he looked at his club face. He looked down at the ground twice, looked back at his club face. Like, you know that thing when you really screw up, but you got to blame it on something else?
Right.
Like when pros miss a putt and then they tap down real hard like it was a spike mark.
Right there,
that they, yeah. Even though they pulled it by 8 or 10.
Like, how that
got away. Well, that's what Hunter Mahan did, too.
Well, unfortunately...
It happens.
that's where Hunter's game is, right?
Yeah.
He is trying to find his tour card again without using an exemption, because I know he's got a money exemption he can use.
Yeah.
but he's trying to play his way in. And certainly you got a feel for a guy that has had great success, a great young from junior college and all the way through. And now he's at 36, 37 and trying to compete at that
stage. It's hard to believe he's that old. Too.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. I was living in Dallas when he first came out of, and he's from McKinney.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he was touted and did all the things. Really, yeah, he's won on tour. He's played the Ryder Cup, and now it's I won't say it's the twilight of his career, but at 37, and you and I have had this conversation. While it's great that you can still be competitive as a professional golfer, but it's being more and more like the other sports.
Right,
you have to be young and it. 37, you're not over the hill, but there's going to have to be a place for 37-year-old professional golfers to go play golf.
So what do we do? Like start a new tour? Yeah, we have the Champions Tour, and we'll have to create like a 35.
Yeah. Well, they have the mid-am, right, for amateurs, so you have a 25 and under, and then
right.
There's regular. And
yeah, but that's that's amateur. So, but
35 and over.
35 to 50 before you get to the Champions Tour?
They need a great place to play and compete because they can't beat the young guys, and they're too young for the old guys. We see it every week.
Nobody would play on that tour, though. That's saying...
For the right amount of money.
Well, maybe if you could get... Yeah, but, you know, that's like saying,
it's not going to happen, but I do think this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And I had this discussion with you. I think the PGA Tour will really separate from what is the World Golf Championships. I think we'll see the World Golf Championships blossom to about a 12 or 15 event series.
Oh.
Tied in with the four majors plus the FedEx Cups. That's a 2022-ish type of event schedule for the top players in the world.
Yeah.
Top 150 and 120 players in the world.
Then everybody else
will split and have a full tour of events that go on simultaneously every time there's a World Golf Championship because you won't have qualified because you're not top 150 in the world.
Right.
Just like the web.com players don't get to play in the PGA Tour unless they get the exemptions and how status.
Yeah.
Whether it's full, conditional or not. Mm-hmm. I think that's the next level. And I think there's enough corporate dollars out there at a mid-level price. So these guys won't be playing for $1 million first place.
Right.
But is $500,000 okay? First place check for okay. So I think they can make that happen. Okay, I think that's what the PGA Tour and those guys, and that will give the field a lot deeper reach for the players who are trying to find their game. Hunter's been hurt. That's part of the thing. That's why I guess we don't realize this because when we watch major sports in football and basketball and hockey, they talk about players' injuries. You know, he's out because of this or that. And golf, he just goes away.
Right.
He's not, where is he this week?
Well, what happened to him?
His back's been out for a month and he's trying to except for Tiger Woods.
Right.
He's the only one that gets talked about. But there's a dime a dozen out there, guys who have some type of nagging injury that they have to overcome. And that is really an issue that most people don't associate with golf.
Mm-hmm.
You play a lot of golf. You know, when you're not well, your back gives you a fit. You're not going to the golf course.
Yeah.
You're just not going to do it. Now, you're not maybe going through the whole rehab process that these guys are doing, but it's not your living. That's what they have to do to get there. And it could take them 3 or 4 months to get well physically. And then you got to try to play golf.
Yeah.
Well, how about your golf game? You told me how you played really well 2 weeks ago, you know, 82, the 39, and, you know, played well, had a lot of great stretches of golf
where
you played, you know, nine holes and and didn't have just a 2 or 3 hole. And then the next time it was more of the same. It was, you know, 4 or 5 good holes and a couple doubles, and the next year it was 87. Well, that's the difference with playing well versus not playing up to your level.
And the other thing is at that level, if you may not play well and you'll shoot 74, and you'll be 8 shots back after the first day and you miss the cut.
Go shoot even par.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. web.com. You shoot even par and you're the field's lapping you.
Right.
You're literally, even the guy at 1 under par, he's 60th and you're 79th, 80th place. You go, I shot even par.
Right.
You didn't play well.
Yeah.
You didn't play well relative to the course. And that's where that's the struggle. Under par is not 1 or 2. It's on average 5 or 6 a day. I mean, but here's what happens, right? The scoring average is 69.2 in the PGA Tour.
Right.
That's only on average about 300 par if par 72.
Right.
But it's a stroke average. That's the whole combine of all those rounds of golf these guys play. Well, that doesn't seem like it's great, but in there's 64s and then there's 73s and 4s and 5s and a lot of 71s and 70s. So that will get you a headache on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Get you not making a cut,
That'll get you losing your card.
Back to the 125, right. The guys that are now, which is the web.com that's going on, right? Now is the 125 to 175 tour players,
right,
who didn't make the FedEx. Mm-hmm. They're competing against the 25 that are in, who are the top 25 money winners on the web dot.
Right.
And the rest of the players on the web dot trying to get this elusive 50 tour cards.
Yeah.
Top 50 get in, top, right, 25 are already guaranteed from web dot. So it's a pretty interesting time in golf, but you look at the players, and there's a handful of other guys. I watched the same replay you did, mm-hmm, a few minutes of it, didn't watch a lot, yeah, but they're out there going, he's there, he's there. Yeah.
It's, I know.
It's a tough crazy route. So for you and I in our regular games, don't despair. You're going to have a good day and you're going to have a bad day. And, you know, just take it for what it's worth. If you have a chance to really work on your game and practice a lot, then maybe your expectations can go up.
Right.
But if they don't, take it for what it's worth. It's a chance to get out and
still play.
Be healthy enough to play.
Right.
You know, that's the thing that we challenge in the business of golf that I'm, mm-hmm, in, is keeping people healthy enough that who want to play that can't.
Right.
And or can't play well
that's
enough.
Something, before I hit my first shot, every time I'm out there, I should concentrate on that. Because there are guys who are a lot younger than me that can play.
Yeah. So, whatever life brings your way with an injury, mm-hmm, and it could be nothing related to, or could be related to, trying to get in better shape.
Right.
I've told people hurt themselves trying to get in, yeah, shape. It's like, geez, Louise, you know.
I have something going on in my shoulder,
right,
when I reach a certain way. But at no point in the golf swing,
right,
do I feel it.
Right.
So I guess I should just play golf all the time, because it hurts just doing other things. So maybe if I just stay on the golf course, it won't hurt.
Just going to the golf course again today, just trying to stay healthy.
Right, that's all.
Just trying to stay healthy.
That's all, yeah.
You know, not going to do anything around the house.
See if I can do that. All right, so real quickly, yeah, we had last week DJ and Jordan one of the great battles, culminated by that drive that on the playoff hole. First of all, the putt he made on 18 to force a playoff.
Both of them. 17.
Both of them.
It was a tremendous. Right. I'm so glad he made that putt, because, yes, Jordan doing it. And both putts went into that on the whirl around. Right. Yep. It was unbelievable. Great finish.
Then DJ, my favorite part of that was Faldo's commentary. When he lined up and Faldo said, well, it looks like he's going to go over the lake. Like, they couldn't believe it. And then he hit the shot, and just the awe in Sir Nick Faldo's voice,
right,
was unbelievable.
He plays a game with which I'm not familiar.
Yes. And now Jordan came out this week and, yeah, said he absolutely regretted how he played the playoff hole, because he could have cleared that lake too, he said.
Yeah,
so,
and, you know, he's back there with
a
6-iron into that, right, green, that pin, right, and he hit
instead
a heck of a shot.
Instead of having a lob wedge or a gap wedge.
Yeah, 140
like
lob
did.
Wedge for whatever, yeah, whatever he is. He's silly. But yeah, that's a perfect, yeah, example of where the game is.
Right.
Players that can take a hole, and if it fits them right, they just make it
a
cupcake.
Yeah.
And he did it, but he had to make a great putt to get there, and he executed. And for the start of the playoffs, man, it delivered. It was really good. And now the guys that are competing to win the FedEx Cup should be a really fun this weekend coming up,
yeah,
up in Boston.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow who's going to move forward.
Right.
Next week it'll be top 70, then top 30,
yeah,
and we'll have something else to talk about.
That's why golf is what
is golf.
Is. Always, there's always things to figure out.
All right. See you, pal.
See you, pal.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by French Lick Resort. Visit them online at FrenchLick.com.
Well, I always talk about on Backspin Golf here how blessed I am to have met so many wonderful people all over the world through this show. And once again, our friend Chris Mascaro, who I absolutely think the world of, has introduced me to somebody that I've been... To say a fan is an understatement, and all of us that follow golf and play golf and consider ourselves fans know who this guy is, because you see, when you read about him, it's all the voice of golf, and it's true. As I said in the open, he wrote, hosted, and produced over 1,300 live shows on the Golf Channel, 1,700 on Sirius XM. He was the first voice on both of those platforms, and just truly an iconic figure in the world of golf. Peter Kessler joins us now. Good morning, Peter.
Well, you certainly just made my day. It's great to be with you, Matthew.
I'll call if you want every couple hours and just say stuff like that. I can do
actually,
that.
Actually, if we could like make that the sound of my alarm on my phone, it's just your voice every day. That'd be perfect.
Oh, well, it's great. It really is great to have you on with us. And in talking about the Golf Channel and SiriusXM and what's happened with golf, of course, I came to the game late. I was 30 when I started playing, which was about 1981. And we never had the platforms that obviously we have now. And you were there at the beginning of it, Golf Academy Live and Golf Talk Live and all the things we take for granted on the Golf Channel now, were you. It was Peter Kessler. And just talk to me for a minute about those early days at the Golf Channel, for example.
Well, that was a really special time in my life. To go back a few years, I had been working on Wall Street as a sales and marketing guy and a public speaker for firms like Smith Barney and Shearson, and I didn't like it, and I wanted to do something else. And on my 35th birthday, referencing your 30th birthday, I woke up and I said, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I went to a voiceover class because people had said things to me about my voice. And it was a four-hour class on a Monday night in downtown New York City. And there were nine actresses and me. And I spent the time looking around the room saying, yes, I would be with her for a weekend. I would be with her for a month. And after a few minutes, I got the gist of what they were trying to teach us, and I didn't go back. And I used to practice at home and read women's ads from women's magazines aloud into a tape recorder and listen to it. And a friend of mine knew somebody who needed a free read on a documentary proposal that was going to be submitted to HBO Sports. And I said, I'd love to do it. And I went downtown New York City again, and I read for a few minutes against some baseball footage from the 1930s and 40s that was in color, and I had never seen color footage, nor had anybody else from the 30s and 40s in baseball. And it was fascinating, and 6 months later they called and said, hey, come back down and read the whole show for an hour. We're not giving you the job, but come on down and read for an hour. And so I went down and I read the whole script, and it turned out that Kodak had given to athletes the first motion picture cameras available for public use. So Mrs. Babe Ruth would take film of her husband and their daughter at home.
Wow.
With him pushing the daughter on the swing. And then she would take footage of Lou Gehrig in the Yankee dugout, and you could tell that he was very sick.
Yeah.
So these guys accumulated 50 hours of this stuff, enough to make a few hour show. And then another 6 months went by, so now it's a year, and they actually offered me the job of narrating of this documentary. And it was called When It Was a Game, and it was a baseball film, and it went on HBO Sports on July 7th of 91. And it was such a big hit that they called me a week later and said, we'd like to make you our voice. So I became the voice of HBO Sports, which meant not so much, because you would go down four times a year on a Friday, read a bunch of stuff, and that was it for the year, and you didn't get paid very much money. But one of the guys that I read documentaries for loved golf, and I had been reading golf history since I was a 13-year-old boy, and I had been reading at that point for about 30 years. Three or four nights a week I would read it. I would read for a few hours, otherwise I was a fairly normal person, but I loved golf history, and I used to go into bookstores, and I used to go to libraries, and anywhere I could get my hands on stuff, I did. So this, my knowledge seeped out as we played golf several times, and he was the guy, this fellow from HBO Sports, who was hired to hire everybody for the Golf Channel.
Wow.
And he wanted to put me to host shows, but they were reluctant because I hadn't appeared on camera. But I had done community theater, and I acted in high school and college, and on Wall Street I stood in front of, you know, 50 stockbrokers and gave speeches. So he knew I could do it. So they made the test my knowledge of golf. It was like, don't throw me into that briar patch. And they used to wake me up at 3 in the morning with golf questions before they would hire me. Now, this is before, you know, you could look it up online and
right.
before you could get out of bed and open a book. And their first question was, this is summer of 94, they called them 3 in the morning and they said, who was the first famous female golfer? And I thought about it for a minute, and I said, Mary, Queen of Scots, because they didn't say first female professional golfer. So they said, gee, that's right. And this went on for a long time, and finally they called and said, who was Sam Parks Jr.? And I knew more about Sam Parks than his mother did. He won the 35 Open at Oakmont, and he was the first guy to actually pace off yardages and
wow.
keep track of it. Jack Nicklaus was given credit for that. Gene Andrews was given credit for that. But it was really Sam Parks Jr., and he figured 75s would win at Oakmont in 35, and they did, and he shot him, and he was the winner, and that's how I got my job. So
unbelievable.
That was the beginning of the thing. And when we first started, I was really just completely left alone to figure out how to host shows and write shows on my own. The sets were being built. People were trying to figure things out. The cameras didn't work. I mean, it was all the problems with a startup that you can imagine before we went on the air. And I just figured out exactly how to do it, which was you sit down and you put down a legal pad, and over a week you write down 100 questions and read everything about the golfer you're going to have on the next Monday night. And then on Monday morning, you cull that list down to 20 questions. And you call your producer and you say, here's what I'm going to do. And then you make sure you know every single answer you're going to get so you can time out the show in your head. So to me, it was like trying to write a show for Broadway.
Yeah.
1 hour, knowing exactly how long the answers would take. And I always got in my 20 questions.
Unbelievable. Just that story right there. But I do have to say, of course, I knew it was Mary, Queen of Scots, too, Peter. I mean, come on. Everybody knows that.
It's just that they didn't know that.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And you and I we talked previously, and, we have probably about 7 minutes left. But I'm going to do, if it's okay with you, at some point soon, I'm going to do a whole hour with you because this is just ridiculous. But reading all about you, as you just said you would do about your guests, there are a couple of stories, and you've spoken to everybody, legends, teachers, pros, amateurs in golf for so long, more than any person. But one story that really got to me was a story about you and Gene Sarazen, and Gene Sarazen talking about somebody that he had met in 1920. Can you tell us that story?
Sure. Gene was born in 1902, and of course he was the first guy to win all four major championships, the Masters being the last one when he played in 1935. And he invented the sand wedge, and actually we used to argue about it because every time I saw him, he would say, well, here's how I came up with the idea. And every time he told me, he had a different story. One time he was in a plane with Howard Hughes, and the flaps went down and the plane went up. Another time, the ducks were landing in the water, and he noticed that the way that their wings went down, then they went up. And I said, you've told me 5 different versions. I said, which is the real one? He said, none of them. He said, it's just that in New York in the 1920s, they had morning and afternoon editions of all the newspapers, and I wanted everybody to have an exclusive. So the story that you wanted to hear is in the 1920s, Gene lived where he grew up in Harrison, New York, about 40 minutes train ride north of New York City. And when he used to go into New York City to see his manager in the 1920s, he would take the train, and there were 3 or 4 stops on the way, and one of them was Pelham. And at Pelham was where the Ziegfeld Follies showgirls used to get on at 1:15 p.m. to go into the city for rehearsals and that night's show. So when Gene went to the city, he made sure he took the train and stopped at the Pelham platform at 1:15 so he could flirt with this one particular blonde who, in his words, wouldn't give him a tumble. 60 years goes by. It's 1985. He's playing in the Bob Hope tournament as just a celebrity. And a man comes up and says, there's a woman who wants to see you. And he said, I'm an old man. What does a woman want to see me for? And the guy said, come with me. And he went up and he meets this woman, and she's a blonde. And she said, do you recognize me? And Gene said, I looked her over, and I didn't recognize her, and I told her so. And she said, well, I'm the blonde that you used to flirt with on the train tracks at Pelham in the 1920s. And I would just like to introduce myself. My name is Mrs. Bob Hope. And when he came on the show with me in 1997, when he was 95, we did an hour. And his family told me later that it was his best hour of memory in the previous 20 years combined.
Isn't that something?
He remembered things that he hadn't remembered for decades. So it was absolutely incredible to have a 95-year-old man who was born the same year as Bobby Jones on the show, remembering everything that had ever happened in the century of golf.
I have such chills right now just hearing you say that, and that I love that story. And in the couple minutes we have left, there's something. I bash Johnny Miller on my show all the time. I'm just telling you, I just bash him all the time. And then I was rereading an interview that you did, I think for Golf Digest, where you talked about Johnny Miller and what he had gone through growing up. And now I feel kind of horrible about it. Johnny Miller, it's quite a story. And again, we can get into it in a little more depth. But it was something that really struck me that very few people know about what Johnny Miller went through in his life.
Well, he's actually a very cerebral guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a complicated guy.
Yes.
He had an older brother who drowned in a swimming accident in the Pacific Ocean, and they didn't find him for 2 weeks. And he hit golf balls for 2 years in his basement after his brother died. His father put down a mat and a net, and he hit balls for 2 years in his basement before he ever went to a golf course to hit a golf shot. And so he was a lonely child, and he became an only child.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew about his brother, and when he came to do a show with us in April of 95, he sat down, and I got him to talk about it, and he was weeping. And at that point, I didn't realize generally that bright people don't call into talk shows. And I took a phone call thinking that somebody would follow up with something sensitive. And he's crying, and the caller says, how do you make a weight shift? And without missing a beat, Johnny said, you don't actually try to shift your weight. What you do is you try to keep your hands as low as possible after the strike, and your weight will have moved for a right-hander into your left side, effectively. And I just fell in love with him in that 10 seconds that came out. And I found out later somebody on my team, who later was not on the team, was laughing when he was telling the story of his brother, and Johnny could hear him through the earpiece and continued to tell the story and sob anyway.
Wow.
It was pretty incredible stuff.
Unbelievable. All right, that just does a whole thing to me. I'm going to call you again very soon. It's one of the joys of my life, hearing your voice and just listening to you. I could do it for hours and hours, and I'm so appreciative of you taking some time this morning, and hopefully we'll talk to you very soon.
Oh, I would love that. I'm a fan of yours. I've been for a long time. I'm a big fan of the show. I love your style. I appreciated the questions. I appreciated that you invited me on, and I very much look forward to the next time.
Talk about making a day. Have a great one, Peter. Thanks.
Thank you, my good friend.
Okay.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Edwin Watts Golf.
All right. Okay. On the phone with us now from South Carolina, the historic golfer. That's right, historic. My brother Mitch Lawrence joins us. And I say historic because he just became the first golfer to do something. The very first, and it's historic. Good morning, Mitch Lawrence.
Good morning, Matt Lawrence.
See, Sean's riveted again already. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I made it through 4 days of play.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that was good. I was proud of myself.
All right, now hold on, because we have some listeners who have no idea what we're talking about. Although there have been articles written about you now, there's all kinds of stuff. You just completed 4 days of playing in what's the actual title of the event?
The Myrtle Beach World Amateur Handicap Championship.
Ah, or the MBW, whatever the initials are.
Yeah, you can go there.
Okay. So this is 4 days of play, along mm-hmm. with the world's biggest 19th hole at night.
Right.
Okay, so just tell us, first of all, 3,000 golfers or something?
3,010, to be exact.
3,010, okay. And you had...
Literally from all over the world. It is truly a world championship.
Yeah. And it's all handicaps, right?
Yes.
So let's start from there. You play only hickories, as most listeners of the show know. And why was this historic, Mitch?
Well, the tournament's been going on for 34 years.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Alan Blondin, who wrote the article in the Myrtle Beach paper, there were over 48,000 players in those 34 years.
Okay.
And none of them have ever played hickories for the event. So that's why I was historic. I'm the first one of 48,000 players that play the event with hickory club.
Now, how cool is that, really?
Pretty cool.
I mean, no, it's really cool. It's not pretty cool. It's really cool. And so you show up. Now, I'm guessing that there were guys. Did when you went out to the golf course the first day, were there guys there that came up to you and said, wow, those are cool? Or what kind of was the feeling when people realize what you were doing here?
Yeah, I think the people that I saw the first day, and I was in the same flight all 4 days. So, and the first day I wore my knickers and a shirt and a tie, and so they had an idea that I was a little strange.
Yeah.
and then they saw the clubs, and they usually come over and go, they usually love looking at them and think mm-hmm. it's cool, and you know. That's pretty much all there is to it. They kind of can't believe I'm doing it, and sometimes I can't believe I'm doing it. But they enjoyed it, and I had a couple guys during the 4 days that were on the foursome that I was in that hit him on the driving range, and so it was cool. And really, the reason I did it, well, two reasons. One is because it's all I play.
Yeah.
And the other is that I just kind of want to spread the word about how fun it is to play with them. So when guys want to hit him and they do that, it's great. That's really why I was playing.
Yeah, kind of bring more attention to the yeah. world of hickories. And so you start out. Now explain to everybody about your handicap and what flight you were in and all that, because that's a big deal.
That made it a little challenging.
Yeah.
My good friend Bob Paskey, who lives in Michigan, and is a really good golfer, is a 6 handicap. And for the first time, we got Bob to come down and play. And so I said, well, we're playing 4 different courses in Myrtle Beach, and they're 40 miles apart over the days. And I don't want Bob renting a car and driving around. He's my friend. So
yeah.
I wanted to drive him and play on the same course. And in order to do that, I had to be willing to play in Bob's flight as a 6.
A 6 handicap. Yeah.
Yes. 6 handicap. My handicap, my hickory handicap that I have through the Society of Hickory Golfers is a 19.
Okay.
So basically, when I go out, if I can shoot bogey golf with the 100-year-old clubs, I'm a pretty happy camper.
Yeah.
But I had to play in the 6 handicap for 4 days. And what that meant, forget the fact that I'm not a 6.
Yeah.
But what it meant was that I had to play from the white tees. Which added, when I go play hickories, I go up pretty much as far as I can. I play the forward tees.
Right.
Because if I kill my driver, I hit it 200 yards.
Right.
Most of the time, it's about 180 and
right.
somewhere in
but
there.
That's the thing people need to realize is you don't hit hickory clubs as far as all the newer clubs. here. So, okay.
So anyway, so I'm playing from the white tees, which is way too long. I would never go back there and play it. So for 4 days, I pretty much had to do that. We played great courses, the Pearl and Wild Wing, and then we played the TPC course of Myrtle Beach, which is where Dustin Johnson has his golf school and where he practices. And then yesterday we played Panthers Run at Ocean Ridge, all great courses. But the TPC was tough because from the white, it was playing about, because we had had rain and there was no roll, it was playing about 6,400 yards, which is about 1,000 yards more total than I would normally play.
Yeah.
So there were holes, literally, where I get to the tee, and I couldn't carry my drive over the forced carry hazard that was in front of me. There were two holes that happened on.
Hmm.
So after trying to get over a couple times, on one hole I purposely hit it way left of the hazard into the trees just so I could play.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't, normally I would just pick up or I would say, okay, I'm done.
Right.
But I couldn't do that because I'm in a handicap championship. I have to turn in a score. So the third round was really, that was a tough, tough day. But all the days I pretty much was hitting, there were a few holes on each course that I could get to in two, even the par fours.
Yeah.
And everything else was just basically at least a three-shot hole for me, even on a regular par four.
Yeah.
So I was hitting a lot of driver, fairway wood, one iron into green.
Yeah. And,
you know.
Yeah.
But that's what it was. So here's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
I finished. There was 40 people in my flight, which was age 60 to 69 and 6 handicap.
Okay.
There were 77 flights in the World Am.
I was just going to say, 77 different flights.
Yes.
That's unbelievable because I was under the impression it was just handicaps. So if you were a 6 handicap, you could be 19 years old with a 6 or 58 years old with a 6.
Correct. And they're all different flights. So I was in the 60 to 69 age group of 6 handicap golfers.
Okay. Gotcha.
So there were 40 guys and guys. I don't think any women played in our thing, but there were 40, and I finished 40th. But
well, again, historic.
The good news is, Bruce, I was only 105 shots behind the leader at the end of the four round.
Wow. Which is it? But you know what?
Wow.
That's it's a little over a shot a hole.
Yeah, but...
I'm just saying. Yeah. I mean, that's nothing.
But the good news is, for the whole event, I was the low hickory handicap golf, the low hickory golf.
Yeah, but you were also the highest handicap hickory golfer. So.
See? It's the half empty, half full conversation.
Yeah, there it is. You and I in a nutshell, right there. the whole thing, and so then, now there was a great article written by Alan in the paper down there. And the whole thing is just way cool. And next year, we've already had our friend Chris Mascaro said, next year he'll come down, the three of us and somebody else will play, and he'll play hickories. I think what I read was you proposed doing an actual hickory flight next year or something, and that the people that run it said if there's enough interest, then they'll talk about it. Well, I would think that would be a no-brainer.
Yeah, I've already talked to them. They really didn't think that there would be that many, and they don't know about the world of hickory, which is there's a lot of people that play, and he said they need 45 to create a flight, and I said, I'll get you 100.
Yeah.
And he looked at me, and he went, but there are a lot of Florida and North Carolina, and there's big regional associations, and I'm sure I can get 100 people to come and play in it. And that's for me, that's the goal.
Right.
To get our own flight, to play from the appropriate yardage. I played in a bunch of hickory events around the country.
Mm-hmm.
I have never met anyone who's played hickories that didn't have fun, that just didn't to go out and have a good time. There's a lot of guys who get real, like today is the final round. They take all the flight winners for the first four rounds, and then those 77 people playoff to be the actual World Am champion.
Right.
So So they're playing the Die Club today at Barefoot Resort, and they're playing right now. And somebody's going to win today. And there's a lot of really serious people who come out and compete for 4 days.
Yeah. So
I experienced a few of them in my foursome.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, well...
But we'll have a Hickory flight next year, and hopefully you and Chris and the whole... I got John McGinnis to on the air on Sirius XM PGA Tour Radio.
Yeah.
McGinnis committed to play in the Hickory flight.
Oh, awesome. Okay. So, it's a done deal for next year.
Yeah, we're gonna do it.
All right. Well, congratulations. I'm always proud to be your brother, but especially golf proud now that you are so historic.
Well, thanks. Yeah. I appreciate it, man.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Yeah. All right.
See ya.
Bye.
Well, that's one of my favorite episodes that we've done. Peter Kessler, wow. I mean, two questions took up 15 minutes. And I'm telling you, one of these days soon, I'm going to do a whole show with Peter because there isn't enough time. If we did hours of shows for him to tell all the stories that he's accumulated over the years. So thanks to Peter Kessler, our new friend here. Of course, the great Perry French, and my brother Mitchie, which is, I kid around with him about it and everything, but it's pretty darn cool that he's the first player to ever play out of 48,000 players using just Hickories. I have my five that he sent me. Actually, I have six now. And it's really fun. And by next spring, I will completely play Hickories. I'll be done with the newer clubs. So thanks to Peter, Perry, and Mitch. Thanks to French Lick Resort, of course, Edwin Watts Golf, and Lexington Parks and Rec, where I will be again at my favorite golf course, Kearney Hill. And we'll be back next week as the playoffs intensify. Don't forget, tomorrow is the final round of this week's FedEx Cup playoff. Thanks for listening. It's Backspin Golf, ESPN Sports Radio, 1300.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Lexington Parks and Recreation. Book your tee time at one of their five public courses at lexingtonky.gov. Play golf, Lexington.